"With me," she said, taking Rachel by the hand and leading her to the center of the room. "Hello, everyone. First things first, I want to introduce all of you to my fabulous new friend, Rachel Chu. She's visiting from New York as the guest of Colin's best man, Nicholas Young. Please give her a very warm welcome." All eyes were on Rachel, who flushed a little and could do nothing but smile politely at the assembled crowd that was now dissecting every inch of her. Araminta continued, "You are all my dearest friends, so I wanted to give you a special treat." She paused for effect. "Today, we're heading to my mum's private island resort in eastern Indonesia." There were gasps of astonishment from the crowd. "We're going to dance on the beach tonight, feast on delish, low-calorie cuisine, and pamper ourselves silly with spa treatments all weekend. Come on, girls, let's get this party started." Before Rachel could fully process what Araminta had said, they were ushered on board a customized Boeing 737-700, where she found herself in a dramatically chic space with streamlined white saddle-stitched leather sofas and glistening shagreen console tables. "Araminta, this is just too much. Is this your dad's new plane?" one of the girls asked incredulously. "Actually, it's my mum's. Bought from some oligarch in Moscow who needed to lower his profile and go into hiding, from what I hear." "Well, let's hope no one blows this plane up by mistake, then," the girl joked. "No, no, we had it repainted. It used to be cobalt blue, and of course, my mom had to do her Zen makeover thing. She had it repainted 3 times before she was satisfied with the right shade of glossier white." Rachel wandered into the next cabin and encountered 2 girls chattering animatedly.
"Told you it was her. She's not at all what I was expecting. I mean, her family is supposed to be one of the richest in Taiwan, and she shows up looking like some..."
Upon noticing Rachel, the girls abruptly went silent and smiled sheepishly at her before fleeing down the corridor. Rachel hadn't paid any attention to their exchange. She was far too distracted by the dove gray leather banquettes and handsome polished nickel reading lamps extending down from the ceiling. One wall was lined with a bank of flat-screen televisions, while the other consisted of silver ladder racks hung with the latest fashion magazines. Araminta entered the cabin, leading some girls on a tour.
"Here is the library / media room. Don't you love how cozy it is? Now, let me show you my favorite space on the plane, the yoga studio."
Rachel followed the group into the next room in utter disbelief that there were people rich enough to install a state-of-the-art Ayurvedic yoga studio with inlaid pebble walls and heated pine floors in their private jet. A group of girls came in squealing with laughter.
"A la Mac, Francesca has already cornered that hunky Italian steward and commandeered the master bedroom," the overly bronzed girl exclaimed in her sing-songy accent.
Araminta frowned in displeasure.
"Wandy, tell her the bedroom is off-limits, and so is Gianluca. Maybe we should all get inducted into the Mile High Club with these Italian stallions," one of the giggly girls said.
"Who needs to be inducted? I've been a member since I was 13,
Wandy boasted, tossing back her blonde-streaked hair. Rachel, at a loss for words, decided to buckle herself into the nearest armchair and prepare for takeoff. The demure-looking girl sitting beside her smiled.
"You get used to Wandy. She's a mega harto, you know. I don't think you need me to tell you how that family is. By the way, I'm Parker Yeo. I know your cousin Vivian," she said.
"I'm sorry, but I don't have a cousin named Vivian," Rachel replied in amusement.
"Aren't you Rachel Chu?"
"Yes."
"Isn't your cousin Vivian Chu? Doesn't your family own Taipei Plastics?"
"Afraid not," Rachel said, trying not to roll her eyes. "My family is originally from China."
"Oh, sorry, my mistake. So, what does your family do?"
My mother is a real estate agent in the Palo Alto area."
"Who are these Taipei Plastics people everyone keeps talking about?" Parker simply smirked.
"I'll tell you, but excuse me for just one moment."
She unbuckled her seatbelt and made a beeline for the back cabin. It was the last time Rachel would see her during the entire flight.
"Girls, I have the scoop of all scoops," Parker burst in on the girls crowded into the master cabin. "I was just sitting next to the Rachel Chu girl, and guess what? She isn't related to the Taipei Chus. She hasn't even heard of them.
Francesca Shaw, lounging in the middle of the bed, gave Parker a withering look.
Is that all? I could have told you that months ago. My mother is best friends with Nikki Young's mother, and I know enough about Rachel Chu to sink a ship.
Come on, Ma. Give us all the dirt, Wanji pleaded,
bouncing up and down on the bed in anticipation. After a dramatic landing on a perilously short runway, Rachel found herself on a sleek white catamaran, the salty ocean breeze whipping through her hair as they sped toward one of the more remote islands. The water was an almost blinding shade of turquoise, interrupted by tiny islands dropped onto the calm surface here and there like dollops of fresh cream. Soon, the catamaran made a sharp turn toward one of the bigger islands, and as they approached, a striking series of wooden buildings with undulating thatched canopies came into view. This was the paradise dreamed up by Araminta's hotelier mother, Annabelle Lee, who spared no expense in creating the ultimate retreat according to her exacting vision of what chic, modern luxury should be. The island, actually just a quarter-mile-long spit of coral, consisted of 30 villas built on stilts that extended out over the shallow coral reefs. As the boat pulled up to the jetty, a line of waiters in saffron-colored uniforms stood stiffly at attention, holding lucite trays of mojitos. Araminta was helped out of the boat first, and when all the girls were assembled on the dock with cocktails in hand, she announced,
"Welcome to Samsara. In Sanskrit, the word means to flow on, to pass through states of existence. My mom wanted to create a special place where you could experience rebirth, where you could pass through different levels of bliss. So this island is ours, and I hope you will find your bliss with me this weekend. But first, I've arranged a shopping spree at the resort's boutique. Girls, as a gift from my mom, each of you can pick out 5 new outfits. And to make this just a little more fun, and also because I don't want to miss cocktails at sunset, we're going to make this a challenge. I'm giving you only 20 minutes to shop. Grab whatever you can, because in 20 minutes, the boutique closes." The girls shrieked in excitement and began a mad dash down the jetty. With its soothing mother-of-pearl varnished walls, Javanese teak floors, and windows overlooking the lagoon, the Samsara collection was normally a haven of civilized tranquility. Today, it was like Pamplona during the running of the bulls, as the girls charged in and ransacked the place in search of outfits that would outdo one another. A fashionista tug-of-war broke out as they began clawing over the most coveted pieces.
"Lauren, let go of this Colette Dinigan skirt before you tear it to pieces! Wandy, you bitch, I saw that Thomas Mayer top first, and you'll never fit into it with your new boobs! Parker, put down those Pierre Hardy flats, or I'll poke your eyes out with these Nicholas Kirkwood stilettos."
Araminta perched on a counter, savoring the scene, adding more tension to her little game by calling out the remaining time at 1-minute intervals. Rachel tried to steer clear of the rampage, taking refuge at a rack overlooked by the rest of the girls, probably because there weren't any quickly recognizable labels on any of the garments. Francesca stood at a nearby rack, picking through the clothes, as if she was surveying medical photos of genital deformities.
"This is impossible! Who are all these no-name designers?" she called out to Araminta. "What do you mean, no-name? Alexis Mabille? Tacon? Isabelle Marin? My mum personally selects the hottest designers for this boutique," Araminta said defensively.
Francesca tossed back her long, wavy black locks and sniffed.
"You know, I only wear 6 designers. Chanel, Dior, Valentino, Etro, my dear friend Stella McCartney, and Brunello Cucinelli for country weekends. I wish you'd told me we were coming here, Araminta. I could have brought my latest Chanel resort wear. I bought this season's entire collection at Carol Tye's Christian Helper's Fashion Benefit."
"Well, I guess you'll just have to slum it for 2 nights without your Chanel," Araminta retorted.
She gave Rachel a conspiratorial wink and whispered,
"When I first met Francesca in Sunday school, she had a plumpish round face and was wearing hand-me-downs. Her grandpa was a famous miser,
and the whole family lived crammed together in an old shophouse on Emerald Hill.
That's hard to picture, Rachel said, glancing over at Francesca's perfectly executed makeup and ruffled emerald green wrap dress.
Well, her grandpa had a massive stroke and went into a coma, and her parents finally got control of all the money. Almost overnight, Francesca got herself new cheekbones and a wardrobe from Paris. You won't believe how fast she and her mother transformed themselves.
Speaking of fast, the minutes are running out, Rachel. You should be shopping.
Even though Araminta had invited everyone to pick out 5 pieces, Rachel didn't feel comfortable taking advantage of her generosity. She picked out a cute white linen blouse with tiny ruffles along the sleeves and came across a couple of summery cocktail dresses made out of the lightest silk batiste, which reminded her of the simple shift dresses Jacqueline Kennedy wore in the 60s. As Rachel was trying on the white blouse in the dressing room, she overheard 2 girls in the next dressing room chatting away.
Did you see what she was wearing? Where did she get that cheap-looking tunic top, Mango?
How can you expect her to have any style? Think she gets it from reading American Vogue?
Actually, Francesca says that she's not even ABC. She was born in mainland China.
I knew it. She's got that same desperate look that all my servants have.
Well, here's a chance for her to get some decent clothes at last.
Just you watch. With all that young money, she's going to upgrade pretty damn quick.
We'll see. All the money in the world can't buy you taste if you weren't born with it.
Rachel realized with a start that the girls were talking about her. Shaken, she rushed out of the dressing room, almost colliding into Araminta.
Are you okay? Araminta asked.
Rachel quickly recovered.
Yes, yes, just trying not to get caught up in the panic, that's all.
It's the panic that makes it so much fun.
Let's see what you found, Araminta said excitedly.
Ooh, you have a great eye. These are done by a Javanese designer who hand-paints all of the dresses.
They're so lovely. Let me pay for these. I can't possibly accept your mom's generosity. I mean, she doesn't even know me, Rachel said.
Nonsense. They are yours. And my mom is so looking forward to meeting you.
Well, I have to hand it to her. She's created quite a shop. Everything is so unique. It reminds me of the way Nick's cousin dresses.
Ah, Astrid Leong. The goddess, as we used to call her.
Really? Rachel laughed.
Yes. All of us absolutely worshipped her when we were schoolgirls. She always looked so fabulous, so effortlessly chic.
She did look amazing last night, Rachel mused.
Oh, you saw her last night?
Tell me exactly what she was wearing, Araminta asked eagerly.
She had on this white sleeveless top with the most delicately embroidered lace panels I'd ever seen, and a pair of skinny Audrey Hepburn-esque gray silk pants.
Designed by? Araminta prodded.
I have no idea. But, oh, what really stood out were these show-stopping earrings she had on. They sort of looked like Navajo dream catchers, except that they were made entirely of precious gems.
How fabulous. I wish I knew who designed those, Araminta said intently.
Rachel smiled as a cute pair of sandals at the bottom of a Balinese cupboard suddenly caught her eye. Perfect for the beach, she thought, walking over to take a better look. They were slightly too big, so Rachel returned to her section, only to discover that 2 of her outfits, the white blouse and 1 of the hand-painted silk dresses, had vanished.
Hey, what happened to my... she began to ask. Time's up, girls! The boutique is now closed, Araminta declared.
Relieved that the shopping spree was finally over, Rachel went in search of her room. Her card read Villa Number 14, so she followed the signs down the central jetty that wound into the middle of the coral reef. The villa was an ornate wood-crafted bungalow with pale coral walls and airy white furnishings. At the back, a set of wooden screen doors opened onto a deck with steps leading straight into the sea. Rachel sat on the edge of the steps and dipped her toes into the water. It was perfectly cool and so shallow she could sink her feet into the pillowy white sand. She could hardly believe where she was. How much must this bungalow cost per night? She always wondered if she would be lucky enough to visit a resort like this once in her life, for her honeymoon, perhaps. But never did she expect to find herself here for a bachelorette party. She suddenly missed Nick and wished he could be here to share this private paradise with her. It was because of him that she had suddenly been thrust into this jet-set lifestyle, and she wondered where he could be at this very moment. If the girls went to an island resort in the Indian Ocean...
Where in the world did the boys go?
Chapter 9. Nick. Macau.
Please tell me we're not riding in one of those.
Mehmet Sabanji grimaced to Nick as they disembarked from the plane and saw the fleet of matching white stretch Rolls-Royce Phantoms awaiting them.
Oh, this is typical Bernard, Nick smiled,
wondering what Mehmet, a classic scholar who hailed from one of Istanbul's most patrician families, made of the sight of Bernard Tai emerging from a limo in a mint-green chalk-striped blazer, orange paisley ascot, and yellow suede loafers. The only son of Dato Taito Lui, Bernard was famed for his brave, sartorial statements, as Singapore Tattle so diplomatically put it, and for being Asia's biggest bon vivant, perpetually hosting wild parties at whatever louche jet-set resort was in fashion that year, always with the hippest DJs, the chillest drinks, the hottest babes, and many whispered the best drugs.
Niggas in Macau!
Bernard exulted, raising his arms rapper-style.
B-Tai, I can't believe you made us fly in this old sardine can. Your G5 had a time to climb I could grow a beard in. We should have taken my family's Falcon 7X,
Evan Fung of the Fung Electronics Fungs complained.
My dad's waiting for the G650 to launch into service, and then you can kiss my ass, fungus,
Bernard retorted. Roderick Liang of the Liang Finance Group Liangs chimed in.
I'm a bombardier man myself. Our Global 6000 has such a big cabin, you can do backflips down the aisle. Can you faggots stop comparing the size of your planes and let's hit the casinos, please?
Johnny Pang, his mother is in awe of those Oz, cut in.
Well, guys, hold on to your balls because I have a very special treat arranged for all of us, Bernard declared.
Nick climbed wearily into one of the tank-like cars, hoping that Colin's bachelor weekend would proceed without incident. Colin had been on edge all week, and heading to the gambling capital of the world with a group of testosterone and whiskey-fueled guys was a recipe for disaster.
This wasn't the Oxford reunion I was expecting,
Mehmet said to Nick in a low voice.
Well, aside from his cousin Lionel and the two of us, I don't think Colin knows anyone here either,
Nick remarked wryly, glancing at some of the other passengers. The lineup of Beijing princelings and Taiwanese trust fund brats was definitely more Bernard's crowd. As the convoy of Rolls-Royces sped along the coastal highway that skirted the island, gigantic billboards flashing the names of casinos could be seen from miles away. Soon the gaming resorts came into view like small mountains, behemoth blocks of glass and concrete that pulsated with lurid colors in the mid-afternoon haze.
It's just like Vegas, except with an ocean view, Mehmet remarked in awe.
Vegas is the kiddie pool. This is where the real high rollers come to play,
Evan remarked.
Do you know the annual gambling revenue of Macau exceeds $20 billion? That's three times more than what Las Vegas takes in every year.
As the Rolls squeezed through the narrow lanes of Felicidad and Macau's old town, Nick admired the colorful rows of 19th-century Portuguese shophouses, thinking that this could be a nice place to bring Rachel after Colin's wedding. The limos finally pulled up in front of a row of dingy shops on Rua da Alfandega. Bernard led the group into what appeared to be an old Chinese apothecary with scratched glass cabinets selling ginseng root, edible bird nests, dried shark fins, fake rhino tusks, and all manner of herbal curiosities. A few elderly ladies sat clustered in front of a small television set watching a Cantonese soap opera, while a rail-thin Chinese man in a faded Hawaiian shirt leaned against the back counter, eyeing the group with a bored look. Bernard looked at the man and asked brashly,
I'm here to buy ginseng royal jelly.
What type you want? The fellow said disinterestedly.
Prince of Peace?
What size jar?
69 ounces.
Let me see if we have some. Follow me,
the man said, his voice suddenly shifting into a rather unexpected Aussie accent. The group followed him toward the back of the shop and through a dim storeroom lined from floor to ceiling with neatly stacked rows of cardboard cartons. Every carton was stamped China ginseng for export only. The man pushed lightly against a stack of wide boxes in the corner, and the whole section seemed to collapse backward effortlessly, revealing a long passageway glowing with cobalt blue LED lights.
"Straight through here," he said.
As the guys wandered down the passageway, the muffled roar became louder and louder, and at the end of the hall, smoked glass doors parted automatically to reveal an astonishing sight. The space, which resembled a sort of indoor gymnasium with bleachers on both sides of a sunken pit, was packed, standing room only, with a boisterous, cheering crowd. Though they could not see past the audience, they could hear the blood-curdling growls of dogs tearing into each other's flesh.
"Welcome to the greatest dogfighting arena in the world," Bernard proudly announced. "They only use Presa Canario Mastiffs here. They are 100 times more vicious than pit bulls. This is going to be damn shock, man."
"Where do we place the bets?" Johnny asked excitedly.
Isn't this illegal?" Lionel asked, peering nervously at the main fighting cage.
Nick could tell Lionel wanted to look away, but found himself curiously drawn to the scene of two huge dogs, all muscle and sinew and fangs, rolling viciously in a pit smeared with their own blood.
"Of course it's illegal," Bernard answered. "I don't know about this, Bernard. Colin and I cannot risk being caught at some illegal dogfight right before the wedding," Lionel continued. "You are such a typical Singaporean. So damn scared of everything. Don't be so fucking boring," Bernard said contemptuously.
"That's not the point, Bernard. This is just plain cruel," Nick interjected.
"Alamak, are you a member of Greenpeace? You're witnessing a great sporting tradition. These dogs have been bred for centuries in the Canary Islands to do nothing but fight,"
Bernard huffed, squinting his eyes. The chanting of the crowd became deafening as the match reached its grisly climax. Both dogs had clamped tightly onto each other's throats, locked in a Sisyphean chokehold, and Nick could see that the skin around the brown dog's throat was half torn off, flapping against the snout of the other dog.
"Well, I've seen enough," he grimaced, turning his back on the fight.
"Come on, La. This is a bachelor party. Don't shit on my fun, Nicky boy,"
Bernard shouted over the chanting. One of the dogs gave a piercing shriek as the other mastiff snapped into the soft of its belly.
"There's nothing fun about this," Mehmet said firmly, nauseated by the sight of the fresh warm blood squirting everywhere.
"Aye, Bai Singh," Bernard said to Mehmet, mindlessly using a racial slur that referred to Sikh Indians. "Isn't goat fucking a tradition in your country? Don't you all think goat pussy is the closest thing to real vag?"
Bernard countered. Nick's jaw tightened, but Mehmet just laughed.
"You sound like you're speaking from experience."
Bernard flared his nostrils, trying to figure out whether he should feel insulted.
"Bernard, why don't you stay? Those who don't want to be here can head to the hotel first, and we can all meet up later,"
Colin suggested, trying to play the diplomat.
"Suits me fine."
"Okay, then. I'll take the group to the hotel, and we'll meet up at
Walan," Bernard swore. "I organized this specially for you, and you're not staying?"
To be honest, I don't care for this either," Colin said, trying to look apologetic.
Bernard paused for a moment, supremely conflicted. He wanted to enjoy the dogfights, but at the same time, he wanted everyone to witness the profuse ass-kissing he would receive from hotel management the minute they pulled up to the resort.
"Kaila, it's your party," Bernard muttered sulkily.
The sumptuous lobby of the Wynn Macau boasted a huge gilt mural on the ceiling that featured animals of the Chinese zodiac, and at least half the assembled group were relieved to be someplace where the animals were covered in 22-karat gold instead of blood. At the reception desk, Bernard was having one of the classic fits he was renowned for the world over.
"What the fuck? I'm a VVIP here, and I booked the most expensive suite in this entire hotel almost a week ago. How can it not be ready?"
Bernard raged to the manager.
"I do apologize, Mr. Tai. Checkout time for the presidential penthouse is 4 o'clock, so the previous guests have not yet vacated the room. But as soon as they do, we'll have the suite serviced and turn around for you in no time at all," the manager said.
"Who are these bastards? I'll bet they're honkies. Those ya-ya honkies always think they own the world."
The manager never broke his smile throughout Bernard's tirade. He didn't want to do anything to jeopardize the business of Dato Taito Lui's son. The boy was such a bloody brilliant loser at the baccarat tables.
Some of the grand salon suites reserved for your party are ready. Please allow me to escort you there with a few bottles of your favorite Cristal.
I'm not going to dirty my Todd's setting foot in one of those rat holes. I want my duplex or nothing, Bernard said petulantly.
Bernard, why don't we visit the casino first? Colin calmly suggested. It's what we would have done anyway.
I'll go to the casino, but you guys need to give us the best private VVIP gambling salon right now,
Bernard demanded of the manager.
Of course, of course. We always have our most exclusive gaming salon available to you, Mr. Tai, the manager said deftly.
Just then, Alistair Cheng wandered into the lobby, looking slightly disheveled.
Alistair, so glad you found us, Colin greeted him heartily. Told you it wouldn't be a problem. Hong Kong's just 30 minutes away by hydrofoil, and I know Macau like the back of my hand. I used to skip school and come here all the time with my classmates, Alistair said. He caught sight of Nick and went over to give him a hug.
Ayo, how sweet. Is this your boyfriend, Nicky boy?
Bernard said mockingly.
Alistair's my cousin, Nick replied.
So you guys played with each other's cocks while growing up?
Bernard taunted, laughing at his own joke. Nick ignored him, wondering how it was possible that Bernard hadn't changed one bit since they were in primary school. He turned back to his cousin and said,
Hey, I thought you were coming to visit me in New York this spring. What happened?
A girl happened, Nick.
Really? Who's the lucky girl?
Her name's Kitty. She's an amazingly talented actress from Taiwan. You'll meet her next week. I'm bringing her to Colin's wedding.
Wow, I can't wait to meet the girl who finally stole the hot breaker's heart, Nick teased.
Alistair was just 26, but his baby-faced good looks and laid-back persona had already made him renowned for leaving a trail of broken hearts all over the Pacific Rim. Aside from ex-girlfriends in Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, Taipei, Shanghai, and one summer fling in Vancouver, a diplomat's daughter at his college in Sydney famously became so obsessed that she attempted to overdose on Benadryl just to get his attention.
Hey, I heard you brought your girlfriend to Singapore, too, Alistair said.
Word travels fast, doesn't it?
My mum heard it from Radio 1 Asia.
You know, I'm beginning to suspect that Cassandra has me under surveillance, Nick said wryly.
The group entered the sprawling casino where the gambling tables seemed to glow with a peachy golden light. Colin crossed the opulent sea anemone pattern carpet and approached the Texas Hold'em table.
Colin, the VIP salons are this way, Bernard said, trying to steer Colin toward the sumptuous salons reserved for high rollers. But it's more fun to play $5 poker, Colin argued.
No, no, we're moguls, man. I created that whole scene with the manager just so we could score the best VIP room.
Why would you want to mix with all these smelly mainlanders out here? Bernard said.
Let me just play a couple of rounds here and then we'll go to the VIP room, okay?
Colin pleaded.
I'll join you, Colin, Alistair said, sliding into a seat.
Bernard smiled tightly, looking like a rabid Boston Terrier.
Well, I'm going to our VIP room. I can't play at these kiddie tables. I only get hard when I'm betting at least 30,000 per hand, he said with a sniff. Who's with me?
Most of Bernard's entourage peeled off with him, with the exception of Nick, Mehmet, and Lionel. Colin's face clouded over. Nick took the other seat beside Colin.
I have to warn you guys. 2 years in New York has made me quite a card sharp. Prepare to be schooled by the master.
Colin, remind me what game this is, he said, trying to lighten the mood. As the dealer began to expertly flick the cards across the table, Nick quietly fumed. Bernard had always been a troublemaker. Why should things be any different this weekend? Singapore, 1986. It all happened so fast, the next thing Nick remembered was the feeling of cold, damp mud against his neck and a strange face looking down on him. Dark skin, freckles, a shock of brownish-black hair.
Are you okay? The dark boy asked.
I think so, Nick said, his vision coming back into focus. His entire back was soaked in muddy water from being pushed into the ditch. He got up slowly and looked around to see Bernard leering at him, red-faced, arms crossed like an angry old man.
I'm going to tell your mum that you hit me,
Bernard shouted at the boy.
And I'm going to tell your mum that you're a bully. Plus, I didn't hit you, I just pushed you away,
the boy replied.
It was none of your bloody business. I'm trying to teach this little dick here a lesson,
Bernard seethed.
I saw the way you shoved him into the ditch. You could have really hurt him. Why don't you pick on someone your own size?
The boy replied calmly, not the least intimidated by Bernard. At that point, a metallic gold Mercedes limousine pulled up to the driveway outside the school. Bernard glanced at the car briefly and then turned back to Nick.
This isn't over. Get ready for part two tomorrow. I'm really going to hun-tum you until you're black and blue.
He got into the back seat of the car, slammed the door, and was driven away. The boy who had come to Nick's rescue looked at him and said,
You okay? Your elbow's bleeding.
Nick looked down and noticed the bloody scrape on his right elbow. He wasn't sure what to do about it. At any moment, one of his parents could arrive to pick him up, and if it happened to be his mother, he knew she would get all ganchong and fuss over him if she saw him bleeding like this. The boy took a white, perfectly folded handkerchief out of his pocket and handed it to Nick.
Here, use this, he said.
Nick took the handkerchief from his rescuer and held it to his elbow. He had seen this boy around, Colin Koo. He had transferred in this semester, and he was hard to miss with his deep caramel skin and wavy hair with a strange light brown streak in the front. They weren't in the same class, but Nick had noticed during PE that the boy had swim practice alone with Coach Lee.
What did you do to piss off Bernard so much? Colin asked.
Nick had never heard someone use the term piss off before, but he knew what it meant.
I caught him trying to cheat off my maths test, so I told Miss Ning. He got in trouble and was sent to Vice Principal Chia's office, so now he wants to pick a fight.
Bernard tries to pick a fight with everyone, Colin said.
Are you good friends with him? Nick asked carefully.
Not really. His father does business with my family, so I'm told I have to be nice to him, Colin said. But to tell you the truth, I can't really stand him.
Nick smiled.
Phew, for a second, I thought Bernard actually had one friend.
Colin laughed.
Is it true you're from America? Nick asked.
I was born here, but I moved to Los Angeles when I was 2.
What's L.A. like? Did you live in Hollywood?
Nick asked. He had never met anyone his age who had lived in America.
Not Hollywood, but we weren't very far. We lived in Bel Air.
I'd like to visit Universal Studios. Did you ever see famous movie stars?
All the time. It's no big deal when you live there. Colin looked at Nick as if assessing him for a moment before continuing.
I'm going to tell you something, but first you have to swear not to tell anyone.
Okay, sure,
Nick replied earnestly.
Say, I swear.
I swear.
Have you heard of Sylvester Stallone?
Of course.
He was my neighbor,
Colin said almost in a whisper.
Come on, that's bullshit, Nick said. I'm not bullshitting you. It's the truth. I have a signed photo from Stallone in my bedroom, Colin said.
Nick jumped up onto the metal guardrail in front of the ditch, balancing himself nimbly on the thin railing as he moved back and forth like a tightrope walker.
Why are you here so late? Colin inquired.
I'm always here late. My parents are so busy, sometimes they forget to pick me up.
Why are you here?
I had to take a special test in Mandarin. They don't think I'm good enough, even though I took classes every day in L.A. I suck at Mandarin, too. It's my least favorite subject.
Join the club, Colin said, jumping up onto the railing with him.
Just then, a large black vintage car pulled up. Ensconced in the back seat was the most curious woman Nick had ever seen. She was rotund with the most immense double chin, probably in her 60s, dressed entirely in black, with a black hat and a black veil over her face, which was powdered an extreme shade of white. She looked like an apparition straight out of a silent film.
Here's my ride, Colin said excitedly. See you later.
The uniformed chauffeur got out and opened the door for Colin. Nick noticed that the car door opened opposite from the way other cars normally did, outward from the end nearest to the driver's door. Colin climbed in beside the woman, who bent down to kiss him on the cheek. He looked out of the window at Nick, clearly embarrassed that Nick had witnessed this scene. The woman pointed at Nick, talking to Colin while the car idled. A moment later, Colin jumped out of the car again.
My grandma wants to know if you need a ride home, Colin asked.
No, my parents are on their way, Nick replied.
Colin's grandmother rolled down the window and beckoned Nick to come closer. Nick approached hesitantly. The old lady looked pretty scary.
It's almost 7 o'clock. Who's coming to fetch you?
She asked in concern, noticing that it was already getting dark.
Probably my dad, Nick said.
Well, it's far too late for you to be waiting here all by yourself. What is your daddy's name?
Philip Young.
Good gracious, Philip Young, James's boy. Is Sir James Young your grandfather?
Yes, he is.
I know your family very well. I know all your aunties. Victoria, Felicity, Alex, and Harry Leong's your uncle. Why, we're practically family. I'm Winifred Koo. Don't you live at Tarsell Park?
My parents and I moved to Tudor Close last year, Nick replied.
That's very close to us. We live on Berrima Road. Come, let me call your parents just to make sure they're on their way, she said, reaching for the car phone on the console in front of her. Do you know your telephone number, dearie?
Colin's grandmother made fast work of it and soon discovered from the maid that Mrs. Young had unexpectedly jetted off to Switzerland that afternoon, while Mr. Young was held up by a work emergency.
Please call Mr. Young at work and tell him that Winifred Koo is going to be sending Master Nicholas home, she said.
Before Nick knew what was happening, he found himself inside the Bentley Mark VI, sandwiched between Colin and the well-cushioned lady in the black-veiled hat.
Did you know your mother was going away today? Winifred asked.
No, but she does that a lot, Nick replied softly. That Eleanor Young, so irresponsible. How on earth Shang Tsuyi ever allowed her son to marry one of those Song girls, I will never understand, Winifred thought.
She turned to the boy and smiled at him.
What a coincidence! I'm so glad that you and Colin are friends.
We just met, Colin interjected.
Colin, don't be rude. Nicholas is a classmate of yours, and we've known his family for a long time. Of course you are friends.
She looked at Nick, smiled her gum-bearing smile, and continued.
Colin has made so few friends since moving back to Singapore, and he's rather lonely, so we must arrange for you to play together.
Colin and Nick sat there completely mortified, but in their own ways rather relieved. Colin was astonished by how friendly his normally disapproving grandmother was being toward Nick, especially since she had previously forbidden any guests at their house. He had recently tried to invite a boy from St. Andrews over after a swim meet and had been disappointed when his grandmama told him,
Colin, we can't have just anyone over, you know. We must know who the family is first. This isn't like California. You have to be so very careful about what sort of people you associate with here.
As for Nick, he was just glad to be getting a ride home and excited that he might soon discover whether Colin really had an autographed photo of Rambo. Chapter 10. Eddie, Fiona, and the Children. Hong Kong. Eddie sat on the fleur-de-lis patterned carpet of his dressing room, carefully unwrapping the tuxedo that had just arrived from Italy, which he had ordered especially for Colin's wedding. He took extra care to peel off the embossed sticker from the tissue-like wrapping paper that covered the large garment box, as he liked to save all the stickers and labels from his designer clothes in his Smithson leather scrapbook and slowly ease the garment bag out of its box. The first thing he did was try on the midnight blue trousers.
Fucky fuck! They were too tight!
He tried fastening the button at the waist, but no matter how much he sucked his gut in, the damn thing wouldn't button. He took the trousers off in a huff and scrutinized the size label sewn into the lining. It read 90, which seemed correct since his waistline was 36 inches. Could he have put on so much weight in just 3 months? No way. Those fucking Italians must have screwed up the measurements. So bloody typical. They made beautiful things, but there was always some problem or other, like the Lamborghini he once had. Thank God he got rid of that pile of cow dung and bought the Aston Martin. He would call Felix at Caracenni first thing tomorrow and tear him a new asshole. They needed to fix this before he left for Singapore next week. He stood by the mirrored wall in nothing but his white dress shirt, black socks, and white briefs, and gingerly put on the double-breasted tuxedo jacket. Thank God, at least the jacket fit nicely. He buttoned the top button of the jacket and found to his dismay that the fabric pulled a little against his belly. He walked over to the intercom system, pushed a button, and bellowed.
Fee! Fee! Come to my dressing room now!
A few moments later, Fiona entered the room, wearing just a black slip and her padded bedroom slippers.
Fee, is this jacket too tight?
he asked, buttoning the jacket again and moving his elbows around like a goose flapping its wings to test the sleeves.
"Stop moving your arms and I'll tell you," she said.
He put his arms down but kept shifting his weight from one foot to the other, impatiently awaiting her verdict.
"It's definitely too tight," she said. "Just look at the back. It's pulling at the center seam."
"You've put on weight, Eddie."
"Rubbish. I've hardly gained a pound in the last few months, and definitely not since they took my measurements for this suit back in March."
Fiona just stood there, not wanting to argue with him over the obvious.
"Are the children ready for inspection?" Eddie asked. "I'm trying to get them dressed right now." "Tell them they have 5 more minutes. Russell Wing is coming over at 3 to take some family pictures of us in the wedding clothes. Orange Daily might do a feature on our family attending the wedding."
"You didn't tell me Russell is coming over today."
"I just remembered. I called him only yesterday. You can't expect me to remember everything when I have much more important matters on my mind, can you?"
"But you need to give me more time to prepare for a photo shoot. Don't you remember what happened the last time when they shot us for Hong Kong Tattle?"
"Well, I'm telling you now, so stop wasting time and go get ready."
Constantine, Augustine, and Callista stood obediently in a straight line in the middle of the sunken formal living room, all dressed up in their new outfits from Ralph Lauren Kids. Eddie sprawled on the plush velvet brocade sofa, inspecting each of his children, while Fiona, the Chinese maid, and one of the Filipino nannies hovered close by.
"Augustine, I think you should wear your Gucci loafers with that outfit and not those Bali moccasins."
"Which ones?" Augustine asked, his little voice almost a whisper.
"What? Speak up," Eddie said.
"Which ones do I wear?" Augustine said again, not much louder.
"Sir, which pair of Gucci loafers? Here's two,"
Larney, the Filipino nanny, interjected.
"The burgundy ones with the red and green band, of course," Eddie said, giving his 6-year-old son a withering look.
"Nechisina, you can't seriously think you could wear black shoes with khaki trousers, can you?"
Eddie scolded.
Augustine's face reddened, close to tears.
"Okay, that covers the tea ceremony. Now go and change into your wedding outfits. Hurry up. I'm going to give you 5 minutes.
Fiona, the nanny, and the maid quickly ushered the children back to their bedrooms. 10 minutes later, when Fiona came down the spiral stairs in a minimalist gray, off-the-shoulder gown with one asymmetrical sleeve, Eddie exclaimed,
"Yamo gao chao? What on earth is that?"
"What do you mean?"
Fiona asked.
"That dress. You look like you're in mourning."
"It's Jill Sander. I love it. I showed you a picture and you approved."
"I don't remember seeing a picture of this dress. I never would have approved it. You look like some spinster widow."
"There's no such thing as a spinster widow, Eddie.
Spinsters are unmarried," Fiona said dryly.
"I don't care. How can you look like death warmed over when the rest of us look so good?"
"See how nice and colorful your children look,"
he said, gesturing to the kids, who cowered in embarrassment.
"I will be wearing my diamond and jade necklace with it, and the jade Art Deco earrings."
"It will still look like you are going to a funeral. We are going to the wedding of the year, with kings and queens and some of the richest people in the world, and all my relatives. I don't want people thinking that I can't afford to buy my wife a proper dress."
"In the first place, Eddie, I bought it with my own money since you never pay for my clothes, and this is one of the most expensive dresses I've ever bought."
"Well, it doesn't look expensive enough."
"Eddie, you are always contradicting yourself," Fiona said.
"First, you tell me you want me to dress more expensively like your cousin Astrid, but then you criticize everything I buy."
"Well, I criticize you when you're wearing something that looks so cheap. It's a disgrace to me. It's a disgrace to your children."
Fiona shook her head in exasperation.
"You don't have any idea what looks cheap, Eddie. Like that shiny tux you're wearing. That looks cheap. Especially when I can see the safety pins holding your pants on."
"Nonsense. This tux was 6,000 euros. Everyone can see how expensive the fabric is and how well tailored it is, especially when they fix it properly. The pins are temporary. I'm going to button the jacket for the pictures and no one will see them."
The doorbell made an elaborate, symphonically excessive chime.
"That must be Russell Wing. Callista, take off your glasses. Fee, go and change your dress. Now."
Why, don't you just go to my closet and pick out whatever you want me to wear? Fiona said, not wanting to argue with him anymore. At that moment, the celebrity photographer Russell Wing entered the living room.
Look at you, Changs! Wow! 곰롱아! Everyone looks so beautiful and stylish, he said.
Hello, Russell, Eddie said, smiling broadly.
Thank you, thank you. We only look stylish for you.
Fiona, you look stunning in that dress.
Isn't it Rafe Simmons for Jill Sander from next season? How in the world did you get your hands on it? I just photographed Maggie Cheung in this dress last week for Vogue China.
Fiona said nothing.
Oh, I always make sure my wife has the very best, Russell. Come, come, have some of your favorite cognac before we begin.
I'm sorry, no need to be so polite, Eddie said cheerily. He turned to Fiona and said,
Darling, where are your diamonds? Go and put on your beautiful Art Deco diamond and jade necklace, and then Russell can start his photo shoot. We don't want to take up too much of his time, do we?
As Russell was taking some of the final shots of the Chang family posed in front of the huge bronze sculpture of a Lipizzan stallion in the front foyer, another worrying thought entered Eddie's head. As soon as Russell was out the door with his camera equipment and a gift bottle of Camus cognac, Eddie called his sister Cecilia.
Cecilia, what colors will you and Tony be wearing at Colin's wedding ball?
내 공 맞 예? I don't quite understand.
The color of your dress, Cecilia, the one you're wearing to the ball.
The color of my dress? How should I know? The wedding is a week away. I haven't begun to think about what I'm going to wear, Eddie.
You didn't buy a new dress for the wedding?
Eddie was incredulous.
No, why should I?
I can't believe it.
What is Tony going to wear?
He will probably wear his dark blue suit, the one he always wears.
He's not wearing a tux?
No, it's not like it's his wedding, Eddie.
The invitation says white tie, Cecilia.
It's Singapore, Eddie, and no one there takes those things seriously. Singaporean men have no style, and I guarantee you half the men won't even be in suits. They'll all be wearing those ghastly, untucked batik shirts. I think you're mistaken, Cecilia. It's Colin Koo and Araminta Lee's wedding. All of high society will be there, and everyone will be dressed to impress.
Well, you go right ahead, Eddie.
Fucky fuck, Eddie thought.
His whole family was going to show up looking like peasants, so bloody typical. He wondered if he could convince Colin to change his seating so that he didn't have to be anywhere near his parents and siblings.
Do you know what Mummy and Daddy are wearing?
Believe it or not, Eddie, I don't.
Well, we still need to color coordinate as a family, Cecilia. There's going to be a lot of press there, and I want to make sure we don't clash. Just be sure you don't wear anything gray to the main event. Fiona is wearing a gray Jill Sander ball gown, and she's wearing a deep lavender lanvin dress to the rehearsal dinner and a champagne-colored Carolina Herrera to the church ceremony. Can you call Mommy and tell her?
Sure, Eddie.
Do you need me to SMS you the color scheme again?
Sure, whatever. I have to go now, Eddie. Jake is having another nosebleed.
Oh, I almost forgot. What is Jake going to wear? My boys will all be wearing Ralph Lauren tuxedos with dark purple cummerbunds. Eddie, I really have to go.
Don't worry. Jake is not going to wear a tuxedo. I'll be lucky if I can get him to tuck in his shirt.
Wait, wait. Before you go, have you talked to Alistair yet? He's not still thinking of bringing that Kitty Pong, is he?
Too late. Alistair left yesterday.
What? No one told me he was planning to go early.
He was always planning to leave on Friday, Eddie. If you kept up with us more, you'd know that.
But why did he go to Singapore so soon?
He didn't go to Singapore. He went to Macau for Colin's bachelor party.
What? Colin's bachelor party is this weekend? Who the hell invited Alistair to his bachelor party?
Do you really need me to answer that?
But Colin is better friends with me!
Eddie screamed, the pressure building in his head. And then he felt a strange draft from behind. His pants had split open at the ass.
Chapter 11. Rachel. Samsara Island. The bachelorettes were enjoying a sunset dinner at a long table set under a pavilion of billowing orange silk on the pristine white sand, surrounded by glowing silver lanterns. with dusk transforming the gentle waves into an emerald froth. It could have been a photo shoot straight out of Condé Nast Traveler, except that the dinner conversation put a damper on that illusion. As the first course of baby bib lettuce with hearts of palm in a coconut milk dressing was served, the cluster of girls to Rachel's left were busy skewering into the heart of another girl's boyfriend.
So you say he just made senior vice president? But he's on the retail side, not the investment banking side, right? I spoke to my boyfriend Roderick, and he thinks that Simon probably makes between 600 to 800 thou base salary, if he's lucky. And he doesn't get millions in bonuses like the iBankers, sniffed Lauren Lee.
The other problem is his family. Simon's not even the eldest brother. He's the second youngest of five,
Parker Yeo pontificated.
My parents know the Tings very well, and let me tell you, as respected as they are not what you or I would consider rich. My mum says they have maybe 200 million max. You split that five ways, and you'll be lucky if Simon gets 40 mil at the end of the day. And that won't be for a long time. His parents are still quite young. Isn't his father going to run for parliament again?
We just want what's best for you, Isabel, Lauren said, patting her hand sympathetically.
But I really think I love him, Isabel stammered.
Francesca Shaw cut in.
Isabel, I'm going to tell it to you like it is, because everyone here is wasting your time being polite. You can't afford to fall in love with Simon. Let me break it down for you. Let's be generous and assume that Simon is making a measly 800,000 a year. After taxes and CPF, his take home is only about 500,000. Where are you going to live on that kind of money? Think about it. You have to factor $1 million per bedroom, and you need at least 3 bedrooms, so you are talking 3 mil for an apartment in Bukit Timah. That's $150,000 a year in mortgage and property taxes. Then say you have 2 kids, and you want to send them to proper schools. At $30,000 a year each for school fees, that's $60,000 plus $20,000 a year each on tutors. That's $100,000 a year on schooling alone. Servants and nannies, 2 Indonesian or Sri Lankan maids will cost you another $30,000. Unless you want one of them to be a Swedish or French au pair, then you're talking $80,000 a year spent on the help. Now, what are we going to do about your own upkeep? At the very least, you'll need 10 new outfits per season, so you won't be ashamed to be seen in public. Thank God Singapore only has 2 seasons, hot and hotter. So let's just say, to be practical, you'll only spend $4,000 per look. That's $80,000 a year for wardrobe. I'll throw in another $20,000 for one good handbag and a few pairs of new shoes every season. And then there is your basic maintenance. Hair, facials, mani, pedi, Brazilian wax, eyebrow wax, massage, chiro, acupuncture, pilates, yoga, core fusion, personal trainer. That's another $40,000 a year. We've already spent $470,000 of Simon's salary, which leaves just $30,000 for everything else. How are you going to put food on the table and clothe your babies with that? How will you ever get away to an Amman resort twice a year? And we haven't even taken into account your membership dues at Churchill Club and Palau Club. Don't you see? It's impossible for you to marry Simon. We wouldn't worry if you had your own money, but you know your situation. The clock is ticking on your pretty face. It's time to cut your losses and let Lauren introduce you to one of those eligible Beijing billionaires before it's too late.
Isabel was reduced to a puddle of tears. Rachel couldn't believe what she had just heard. This crowd made Upper East Side girls look like Mennonites. She tried to shift her attention back to the food. The second course had just been served, a surprisingly tasty langoustine and calamansi lime gelée tureen. Unfortunately, the girls on her right seemed to be loudly fixating on some couple named Alistair and Kitty.
Ayah, I don't understand what he sees in her, Chloe Ho lamented. With the fake accent and fake breasts and fake everything.
I know exactly what he sees in her. He sees those fake breasts and that's all he needs to see, Parker cackled.
Serena Oh told me that she ran into them at Lung King Heen last week and Kitty was in Gucci, head to toe, Gucci purse, Gucci halter top, Gucci satin mini shorts, and Gucci python boots, Chloe said. She kept her Gucci sunglasses on all through dinner, and apparently even made out with him at the table with her sunglasses on.
A la Mac, how tacky can you get? Wandy hissed, patting her diamond and aquamarine tiara. Parker suddenly addressed Rachel from across the table.
Wait a minute. Have you met them yet?
Who? Rachel asked, since she was trying to tune the girls out rather than listen in on their salacious gossip.
Alistair and Kitty.
Sorry, I wasn't really following. Who are they? Francesca glanced at Rachel and said,
Parker, don't waste your time. It's obvious Rachel doesn't know anybody.
Rachel didn't understand why Francesca was being so icy toward her. She decided to ignore the comment and took a sip of her Pinot Gris.
So, Rachel, tell us how you met Nicholas Young, Lauren asked loudly.
Well, it's not a very exciting story. We both teach at NYU and we were set up by a colleague of mine, Rachel answered, noticing that all eyes at the table were fixed on her.
Oh, who is the colleague? A Singaporean? Lauren asked.
No, she's Chinese-American, Sylvia Wong Swartz.
How did she know Nicholas? Parker asked.
They met on some committee.
So, she didn't know him very well, Parker continued.
No, I don't think so, Rachel replied, wondering what these girls were getting at. Why the interest in Sylvia?
Oh, I love setting up my friends, too, so I was just curious to know what motivated your friend to set the two of you up, that's all.
Parker smiled.
Well, Sylvia's a good friend, and she was always trying to set me up. She just thought Nick was cute and a total catch.
Rachel began, instantly regretting her choice of words.
It sure sounds like she did her homework on that, didn't she? Francesca said with a sharp laugh.
After dinner, while the girls took off for the disco marquee precariously erected on a jetty, Rachel headed alone to the beach bar, a picturesque gazebo overlooking a secluded cove. It was empty except for the tall, strapping bartender who grinned broadly when she entered.
Signorina, can I make you something special?
He asked in an almost comically seductive accent. Hell, did Araminta's mother only hire dashing Italians? I've actually been craving a beer. Do you have any beer?
Of course. Let's see. We have Corona, Duvel, Moretti, Red Stripe, and my personal favorite, Lion's Stout.
That's one I've never heard of.
It's from Sri Lanka. It's creamy and bittersweet with a rich tan head.
Rachel couldn't help giggling. It sounded like he was describing himself.
Well, if it's your favorite, then I have to try it.
As he poured the beer into a tall, frosted glass, a girl whom Rachel hadn't previously noticed strolled into the bar and slipped onto the stool next to her.
Thank God. There's someone else here who drinks beer? I am so sick of all those pissy low-cal cocktails, the girl said.
She was Chinese, but spoke with an Australian accent.
Cheers to that, Rachel replied, tipping her glass at the girl.
The girl ordered a Corona and grabbed the bottle from the bartender before he could pour it into a glass. He looked personally wounded as she tilted her head back and downed her beer in full-bodied gulps. Rachel, isn't it?
That's right, but if you're looking for the Taiwanese Rachel Chu, you've got the wrong girl, Rachel shot back preemptively.
The girl smiled quizzically, a little baffled by Rachel's response.
I'm Astrid's cousin Sophie. She told me to look out for you.
Oh, hi, Rachel said, disarmed by Sophie's friendly smile and deep dimples. Unlike the other girls sporting the latest resort fashions, she was dressed plainly in a sleeveless cotton shirt and a pair of khaki shorts. She had a no-nonsense pageboy haircut and wore no makeup or jewelry except for a plastic swatch on her wrist.
Were you on the plane with us? Rachel asked, trying to remember her.
No, no. I flew in on my own and just arrived a little while ago.
You have your own plane, too?
No, I'm afraid not. Sophie laughed. I'm the lucky one who flew Garuda Airlines. Economy class. I had some hospital rounds to do, so I couldn't get away until later this afternoon.
You're a nurse?
Pediatric surgeon.
Once again, Rachel was reminded that one could never judge a book by its cover, especially in Asia.
So, you're Astrid and Nick's cousin?
No, just Astrid's, on the Leong side. Her father is my mum's brother. But of course, I know Nick. We all grew up together, and you grew up in the States, right? Where did you live? I spent my teenage years in California, but I've lived in 12 different states. We moved around quite a bit when I was younger. Why did you move around so much? My mom worked in Chinese restaurants. What did she do? She usually started out as a hostess or a waitress, but she always managed to get promoted quickly.